got him before. He's got the chairperson selected today.
He will be probably in the next half an hour to an hour. But as mentioned earlier, nominations for acting chairman.
I propose Dave Conway to be the interim chair.
And I will second it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, the committee secretary, and thank you for members, I mean, for giving me this short period to be in charge of this committee, you know. I hope I'm not going to abuse my power. But I'm asked for, I do have the capability, the competency is there to abuse my power. Honorable members, we are gathered here today to listen and obviously conduct our oversight role over the report to be tabled by SSA team, one of the best teams so far in our country in as far as service delivery is concerned, under the leadership of Ntate Padilwotla. Ntate Padilwotla and your team, you are more than welcome as usual, you are at home here. And also the chairperson of the council, Mr. Gabriel, thank you very much for creating this particular exercise. And without further ado, I'm going to afford you the opportunity, I mean, to take us through your presentation. Thank you.
Chairperson, honorable members, it's always a pleasure to come to report back to yourselves and the nation on that which you have asked us to go and do and execute. But before I do so, let me introduce the team that the country has afforded me to lead that far. To my left is Celia de Klerk, she is head of strategy. The chair of council has already been introduced, Mr. Howard Gabriel. He's already giving us the necessary support. Dr. Jairo Aro, Head of Methodology and Standards. Ms. Simpi Titovejani, CFO. Ms. Anagret Mpasele, Acting Deputy Director General for Corporate Services. Behind me is Ms. Kifido Nasiting, Deputy Director General for Population and Social Statistics. Mr. Kaldi Mulomani, if the census goes wrong, he has just taken over the yellow suit now. Cut his throat. He's the man, he's the project director for census. Chief Raisanga Maluleke, who is the deputy director general for corporate relations, his international relations, provinces, and communications. Ethel Deneka is head of geography and statistical support and informatics. Joe Dibier is head of deputy director general for economic statistics, and Trevor Civic, right at the back there, is the manager for communications. This is the team that makes Statistics South Africa the organization it is, and many others are back at office doing the work while we are giving the report here. Honorable members, the content has three elements: organizational performance, financial performance, and we think you may need to know a little bit about where we are on the population census. We have seen it, you have experienced it, but probably from the horse's mouth, you might be desirable to say a word or two about that. We've said that our theme is trust in statistics to building a sustainable organization. But in addition to that, we believe that statistics, in the context particularly of the National Saving Commission, provides us tools by which we know and understand. So we have said, through the statistics we have in South Africa, I know the home I understand. And that must be a running theme, that at any given point in time, we must know our country, we must understand it. And if we were to encapsulate the essence of statistics, it is about knowledge and understanding. If we were to encapsulate statistics in terms of long-term vision, it is about knowledge, it is about understanding. Hence the South Africa I know, the home I understand. Now, what is the organization of performance? We have looked at some modern literature around perspective. And the reason why we exist as an organization is because of this external perspective. And in this external perspective, it's actually expanding the statistical information database. And the role of statistics as an instrument that provides the evidential basis for decision making. Prime Minister of the UK, Sir Keir, said one day that in God we trust, but all of us will need data. So statistics provides the evidential basis for making decisions. And the state, we call it down to privacy. So in our presentation here, we have looked at the priorities of government. And those priorities are economic growth, price stability, employment, life circumstances, safety and security, sustainable resource management, health, education, rural development. Those were the 12 priorities that were concentrated into 10. And we have mapped our work against those priorities. Now, before I go into what it is that we have achieved, it's also important to say how it was achieved, the input side of the work budget. We are delivering here output. Having said very little around the inputs except the financial resources at our disposal. But statistical work, collection of information, is hard work because this work is very intrusive at times, or at least perceived to be very intrusive. However, with all those difficulties and the hard work that goes into statistical collation, we got results that we are here to present to you today. If we look at what it is that we collect, a time to collect on the basis of paper, pencil, on the basis of the electronic system, from different parts of the country, and from everyone, because life has equal worth. Collected under different circumstances and conditions. At the end of it all, you've got to make sense of what it is. And indeed, we have delivered statistics that make sense of what it is that we are doing. So what is the development outcome? Create decent employment through inclusive economic growth. What are the things that we have done here by statistics that support? In terms of what we needed to deliver was to provide statistical information on the primary, secondary, tertiary, and transport sector. We had to deal with statistical information on the financial performance. We had to research in the work that we do around the economy. And we had to look at what the level of economic activity is. In relation to those, the performance indicators are very clear in our annual report that we have delivered annual series published on schedule, large sample surveys, 5 published. They have been a delay in agricultural centers, as well as the large sample surveys were published a bit late, but it's in the financial year. And we have delivered the quarterly and annual series, the 2 quarterly and the 9 annual, and then of course 11 research reports. GDP estimates, watch the stage towards the end of this month, we'll be delivering quarterly GDP as well as annual. And then of course 5 research documents that look at how we compile the gross domestic product in order that we achieve mastery across GDP. So we have maintained the international standard. Many countries, or a number of countries, don't often maintain the international standard. Argentina amongst them, Greece amongst them. Evidence abounds around what happens when an international standard is not kept. We have strengthened our research capability. Of course, we have not provided sufficient funds for economic statistics. The emerging issues will require adequate funding for economic statistics. The turmoil in the world today requires that economies measured appropriately using the best available methods and, of course, using resources that we will seek. So these challenges are emerging and are urgent, and we require further funding for funding economic statistics. What about development outcomes? Create decent employment through inclusive economic growth. Here we are looking at the issue of price stability and the output here, statistical information on consumer price index, the CPI. The governor held the repo rate steady in the last MPC. Only through this information can she make those kinds of decisions. The information on prices, on producer price index, the income and expenditure survey, which provide for us a raft of evidence of what South Africans spend their money on, comes from the income and expenditure survey. And out of that, we then also generate weight for the consumer price index. What are the achievements? We have brought the CPI area by a week to the delight of the Reserve Bank and other users of the CPI. We are re-engineering the CPI, which is hopelessly old, and getting it onto a par is a lot of work that we are in process. And we are planning a date of 2013 for release. And we look at the PPI for services in construction and all other services. We need to expand. Employment, job creation, and decent work. What the development outcome here is to create decent employment through inclusive economic growth. What has been the response of statistics to this? We provide information on labor market. We provide statistical information on employment and earnings. And we have consistently released the information on the labor market, as well as on quarterly employment targets. That's what comes from the Fed. I'm sure that we are all aware that we have been at some kind of discourse with outcome. And it's very important that today there is this comment that data needed to back up jobs claims. The author of the article, Dr. Andrew Kerr and Professor Martin Wittenberg, argue that any private concern that collects has a vested interest in variables in the collection of statistics. And it's important that an independent body collects statistics because such a body doesn't have vested interest. And we have been at each other's throat with ad hoc about these job claims and the methodological soundness that it questions of austerity support. That is contained in the business day to day. I think robust discussions of this nature around how information is collected and in whose interest it is collected are very, very important. So the Court of Labour for Study, we have included additional modules, we have included things like activities of young people, time use, and voluntary work. Of course, there is always the problem of alignment between the Quarterly Employment Survey and the Quarterly Labour Force Survey. When you don't have a good business register or a good system of administrative records, these kinds of alignments and harmonizations arise. We have been on a program for the last 11 years between ETI, now CIPRO, and now the Commission, FSA and SAP. This thing is delivering nothing. This business ready. Yes, it is the cornerstone for making sure that alignment is achieved. It is a matter that we have refreshed the mandate there in 2009. But from where I sit, I don't see a lot of progress in relation to dealing with this quarterly employment survey by ramping up the business registration process. Life circumstances, service delivery and poverty. Here we are looking at creating sustainable human settlements that improve quality of household life, which is one of the priorities of government or the state. The issue of building a responsive, accountable, effective, and efficient local government system. What are the outputs there? The outputs are the statistical information on the life circumstances of South Africa. We run surveys on this. Information on poverty, information on service delivery, and information on victims of crime. What have we done? We published this report a little late, the LCS. We published the other one on information on poverty late in September. The non-financial statistics were published earlier because of improved methodological collections, and statistical information on victims of crime, the collection has been completed and results will be released in 2011-2012. Well, publishing late must be concerning to everyone, including to ourselves. But the process of producing statistics is so complex that even when Council said the data you are ready in January, we still have to look at other things. Although the proportions would have remained the same in the release of living circumstances survey, the levels were not going to be the same because the universe on which we based our estimates was rather unknown. And we believe that in the census and the listing process and getting the dwellings and households, then we have reaffirmed the level. What are the achievements? We are finalizing work on poverty line and we are holding discussions across the country. And of course, the challenges are the master sample replenishment, which we believe that the census will actually provide replenishment for. Population level. Here the development outcomes are on sustainable human settlement, responsive and countable, effective and efficient local government, healthcare and life expectancy, vibrant, teachable and rural communities that contribute to supply and improve the quality of basic education. Let me go to this issue of life expectancy. The world of statistics is a world that is terribly and seriously contested. In 2003, we had to discuss an issue around the UN Human Development Index at the Statistics Commission. This came about after Castel, the head of Australia Studies, had critiqued the basis for the NDI. And in 2003, he discussed this issue. In 2005, South Africa presented, and I presented, a room paper that was contesting some of the issues, or in general, some of the indices and indicators that the UN was publishing. Among them, the life expectancy. This is a heavily contested indicator. Our main argument is that as country systems are not respected by the UN system, at times they often donate statistical information to countries. But at the same time, we are arguing that countries are not taking responsibility for their own statistics, and that's why they find themselves in that kind of situation. So a resolution of this is that we've got to be very professional in the way we collect statistics, in the way we deliver them, in order that the UN systems can draw from country systems. But the situation and the industry has grown such that this confusion abounds, and UN institutions continue, even in the presence of verifiable data from countries, to donate statistics to countries. So this room paper served in 2005. We then petitioned the UN Secretary General, South Africa, Morocco, and Brazil on the same issue in 2011. And as the chair of the Statistics Commission, I had to petition the Secretary General on the issue of what is rapid statistics that are produced by institutions that have self-interest. That we did in 2010, November. So the world of statistics is very, very contested, and we continue to contest and provide the best, the statistics under best production method. So, what are the performance indicators here? Under demographic profile, population projections, public test schedules, and statistical information on vital registrations that were published monthly and then annual release as schedules. What are achievements? We launched the census in all provinces, we ran the dress rehearsal, and of course the challenges is the completeness of administrative records in relation to vital registrations. And this leaves us vulnerable to how we measure our indicators. So it's the case in terms of our registration system, the completeness of our business register, because it leaves us vulnerable as well in how we measure the economy. Population census, 2011. Size, nature, and geographic location of the study of South African population. What did we do? We launched in all 9 provinces, and the premiers launched. We tested what is called the CSAP census and survey administration system. We had some procurement delays. Some districts didn't have connectivity, telephone lines, ASDL lines. And of course, data processing systems were developed. We tested the census in December, or rather in October last year. We also followed up with a quality process to look at what is actually happening. Because if we went into the census from the mini test that we ran, or the dress rehearsal that we ran in October, the undercount in the census was going to be 25%. That's what we saw. And then from then we were actually looking at testing different environments and identifying what the sources of this undercount would have been. Okay. Then there's no, I'll move back then. And then, of course, what are the achievements we had under expenditure, brought it on census, the project 2011, that was when under expenditure has been actually recovered. I mean, we have spent, as indicated, that these are project money and it will be spent in the census. And then, of course, we had the rollovers which we received. Leading the national statistics system, what are the output statistical policy, strategy and planning, coordination and technical support and statistical reporting? What are we learning from this? We've led the MDG and lessons learned we are taking through into a well-established government structure for consulting with various stakeholders, particularly the NGO community. Constraints are that, of course, there is a skills gap data and in the South African national statistics system. Leading coordination of statistical production, purpose of the Statistics Act, to advance planning, to provide for coordination, to provide for cooperation. In our work program, we are looking at the role players, the minister, the statistician general, the statistics council, and other organs of state health producers. We need to move in a coordinated fashion to produce better statistics and provide skills for them. On the international development front, the African Symposium for Statistical Development, comprising of 53 countries, at South Sudan 54, and in the 2010 round of censuses, say for Somalia, all African countries will be running their censuses under the Africa Count program. We've got the ISI, it's a legacy project, and the South Africa is the vice president of the ISI International Statistics Institute. Unfortunately, I couldn't go to Ireland because of the census in August. We are looking at the Charter on Statistics to be signed and ratified by Parliament, the Charter on African Statistics. And then, of course, we are part of the BRICS and we have a joint publication between the BRICS countries, meeting China, India, Brazil, and Russia. What are the constraints? Harmonization of statistics through the achievements of SHASTA, that has been approved by heads of state. We are working with the African Union on the implementation plan for the strategy for harmonization of statistics. Challenge is that setting the international statistics agenda can actually constrain your own resources. The internal perspective on quality, here we are looking at the processes and support. We are improving on our quality management. We are monitoring and evaluating our statistical service. We are improving on the business sampling frame. We are looking at the bearing frame. And we are looking at integrated communication and marketing. The business registration reform project I talked about earlier, I think we are not having any headway there. And of course, methodology and analytical capability remains a challenge because we don't have enough number of people to do this work. Productivity and service delivery, we are looking at integrated survey operations. We are improving on our governance and accountability. We are improving on our management support. And we have adopted program and project management as the way of doing our work. We are looking at risk management. We are improving our representativity at SNS, 40.3% female. Of course, we have qualified and qualified audit. We run a project management. We have implemented what we call integrated management information system and website. And then, of course, the challenge that we have is succession planning and talent management. That's a big problem that we have. What about investing in learning and growth of the organization, human capital, information capital, and organizational capital? We have work in terms of training abroad, training locally. We have started a master's program of schools, which is at Stellenbosch. This is a regional center for regional urban and regional studies, including statistical exploration, very relevant in the environment that we operate in. We have piloted the delegating official statistics. We have foreign study programs continuing with the Tanzania and Ghana, and I will come to ethical statistics in French. Of course, the skills gap is very big. Connectivity is very difficult with CETA, and of course, we still are in the building which we had wanted to exit a number of years ago. This is the number of interns that we have absorbed year in, year out. And the financial information, as you know, that we have had unqualified audit for 5 consecutive years. There are 3 emphases of nature. We have improved in our governance and our financial management. Of course, the challenges are stability and performance of Transelva systems, including the ones supported by CETA, and capacity and capability of staff. This is the money that was allocated. This is how it was used. And this is the expenditure of the program as you see in the report. And of course, the fact sheet about the census. I think in this fact sheet of the census, we have all witnessed the census, we have all participated in the census. It has, by all counts, been the most successful compared to 96 and 2001. And we certainly have paid 94,510 field workers. By this time, in the 2 censuses, we are nowhere near paying anybody. Any affected checks and all that kind of thing. So this census has been a well-run census. I think we should thank the South African public, the media, the Mauritius, the people who did this work. And of course, we will release the census results in 2012 November. As an organization, if you look at where we come from, in 1994-1999, when we started, we had a really crisis of leadership. The second crisis was crisis of autonomy, where integrity of product were challenged. Phase 3, we really had an advent of corporate governance. We had so many qualified audits and all those kinds of things. But we are in phase 4 now, where we actually have to look at growth through coordination. And rapidly we'll be moving, as we implement the Act to the full, into institutional continuity and ensuring that we have built a sustainable organization. And that growth will be growth through collaboration. Phase 3 is behind us. We are on phase 4 and looking forward to phase 5 as a mature organization. We need to build trust in statistics, and that will be through broadening the role and vision of digital statistics, and that will be done through growth, and that growth will be achieved through coordination. We will help to enhance the quality of statistics, sustain capacity, and we will do more with the same. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Matelosa. I'm not sure if there's anything, Chair, from the Council that you'd like to bring to our attention. Chair, I'm going to be very brief. In this meeting, we're reporting on the annual report for the last year, but I think at the early stage, we are very proud of the work that has happened over the last few months in relation to the census. We obviously will account for that work in more detail in next year because it falls into this financial year. But what we have witnessed in the public over the last few weeks really is a demonstration of the preparatory work Statis has been doing, that the Council has made inputs into over the past 3 or 4 years. And I think really the important thing to say at this point, without us having the final numbers of how many census forms have been completed, that all indications look very positive. And I think it would be in order for me to say on behalf of the Council that we congratulate the Stats SA team. They've made us proud over the last few weeks. During this year that the report focuses on, there are a number of major milestones that have been reached. And probably the one thing that stands out most is the fact that with the efficiencies that were gained in the way economic staff has been conducting their work, we were able to reduce the release, bring the date of release of CPI forward by a week, which I think is a testament to the kinds of improvements that is taking place. The fact that this is again an unqualified audit, I think it's the fifth one in the row, and some members, especially in the opposition, will recall when I was a freshman, my first few months after being appointed the chair, we were on the red carpet in this committee with very serious bricks being hurled at us for the failures at the time. But what this demonstrates is the investment over time that has been put into building the administrative systems, and we're very happy that we have achieved that. Chair, if we must point out some of the big challenges, going forward, we really need to invest in building the national statistical system. But that poses serious challenges. The first challenge that it poses is for Stats SA to have the capacity to interface with every government department that seeks advice. And we are concerned that that capacity is not strong enough yet. The second part is for each organ of state to have the capacity to conduct reliable, relevant, timeous official statistics. And again, there are serious challenges of skills and of capacity development within each organ of state to perform that. So as we go into this new period where Section 14 of the Statistics Act is going to be implemented more vigorously now, these are important challenges that need to be addressed. And it is a major task we have going forward. The SG refers to the work that are being done in training and in development and in skills. One of Council's main concerns is that that work needs to be stepped up if we're going to succeed. The SG also refers to succession planning. Council said to the Minister that if we are a board in a classical sense of company law in South Africa, we would have been concerned about succession planning because continuity of business is an important task we have. And it's not about individuals. It is the ability that any DDG can step into the shoes of the SG and it will be business as usual. It is the ability of any chief director or executive manager stepping into the shoes of a DDG, or any director stepping into the shoes of an executive manager, or any deputy director stepping into the shoes of a director, and it will be business as usual. And we don't believe that Stats SA is at that point yet. That is a major task we have going forward in building this institution. At the same time, Chair, let me again just say, I'm very proud of the work Council has done in assisting Stats SA. There were many crazy ideas that the SG brought to us. I'll give you one. He came to Council and he sought our support to approach the President to declare Census Day a public holiday, and we refused. But what you have is a very healthy relationship in that the senior management of Stats SA is very open and transparent with Council, and at times we give them advice they don't like. But really looking over the past year, and particularly the year of this report, we are extremely grateful for the manner in which council could interface with StatsSA, and we want to congratulate the management team on their report. Thank you very much, Chairperson, for your submission, but also thank you very much for highlighting strategic issues going forward. I think we, at some stage we'll have to come back to those. Members, allow me to welcome our Chairperson. Without any further waste of time, let's go to question session. I think we have how much time? Now, let's ensure that we pose as many questions as possible, and members will take notes as we have. We just have one round of questions and responses. I'm noting Mayor Adam. I'm noting Honorable Lienge, Honorable George, Honorable Dubezana. I think let's pose our question in that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson of the session. My first question is a general question. I'd like to know, I've seen this weekend some of the census cards. When are they going to be retrieved? And then, Chairperson, my question is on page 142. Is that a printing error on the personal cost by salary band? You have level 3 to 5 permanent temporary staff, and level 6 to 8 only temporary staff on page 142. Then on slide 16 of the presentation, one of the challenges seems to be the addressing of the disputes of debt. Is there any time frame and a strategy to address the skills gap? As I'm of the meaning that the skills gap also influences some of the statements made by the Auditor General on page 188, the leadership, that says that officials responsible to account for expenditure and so and so did not fully comply with the requirements. How often are you reskilling your staff? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, let me first appreciate the progressive mechanism that is used by states in terms of interacting with our communities, especially the poorest of the poor. It was very pleasing, Chairperson, to come across the officials, the most senior officials, including the SG of the institution, interacting with our own people. We want to commend the management as well as the decision makers of the institution for the job well done. Chair, the question that I would want to pose is around the decentralization of corporate services. So such decentralization, I want to check if it goes further to the districts, because in terms of what I see in the annual report, it refers mostly to provinces. I want to check maybe as to whether the institution has the human resource capacity that will respond to the needs of the actual districts cascading down to the municipalities. And also, Chair, if I can get maybe clarity on the collaborative mechanism of the institution in ensuring that the stakeholder participation is actually achieved maximally. especially the Department of Home Affairs, as well as the Department of Arrival and Departure, that is the Department of Health, because that's where documentation of living and death is actually done. The other one, Chair, is the issue that relates to job creation. The intensive, yes, it's part of a government program to capacitate our young people who have graduated from tertiary levels in schooling. But can I get more clarity on the issue of sustainable jobs that have been actually done by the institution, or else an indication as to what happens to the young people who actually been on the intensive of the organization? Is there any mechanism to incorporate them once they get that kind of information, looking at the kind of work that they do, which is more of a reserve? So those are the questions, Chair, but I don't want to deal much with the issue of data verification in order to ensure that it is not an event, but it is frequently verified by the institution. What is that?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Statistician General. You mentioned that the need for accurately measuring the economy is vitally important. That's pretty obvious. But something that I've been thinking about for quite a while is the informal economy. I know it's notoriously difficult to measure it, but you know, I read through the report and I see all the good work that you're doing, but I wonder how satisfied you are that we are actually accurately measuring the level of activity in the informal sector. And that's allied to my second question about unemployment. Now, if somebody is living somewhere in an informal settlement and they are doing activity and they're making some money from it, they are not unemployed. And I'm just wondering whether we're getting it right, because somewhere the numbers aren't looking altogether congruent to me. Because if you've got such an enormous amount of unemployment and inactivity, economic inactivity, how are people actually staying alive under those circumstances? So something is going on, I am convinced. And then the council chairperson mentioned the census. I'd just like to thank the Statistician General for a response to a query that came to my attention from somebody regarding concern over erasing of pencil data on the forms. Your response was very, I think, very appropriate, and I'm hoping that the message can get out there a bit more, because you don't want the census to be compromised in any way. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson of the session. I'm sure one needs to first really congratulate the department. You were quite visible, like what the previous Honourable said, Dr. Luyenge. That interaction we really appreciated. Some of us were looking at it through the national media. Indeed, Mr. Gabriel, you were visible, and we are congratulating your department for doing that. Having said that, you have indicated that to achieve goals effectively and efficiently, you need collaboration, and this committee is part of that collaboration. So I've got a few issues here, and I hope that these issues will assist the department to improve next time, so that when you come to us, then there is improvement. If you go to page 179 of your report, annual report, you have got so much of the donor funds. And it's a bit painful to see that they've got so much of the donor fund, it's not fully utilized. I am aware that it looked like it was specifically designed for a particular category of people with a specific skill. My request is it possible that when those agreements from between yourself and the donors, you extend them a bit, you make, because you know our country, we have got people that are doing economics and finance, and those, they still belong to the Fed, because they deal with the numbers. Now, if you make these agreements to be narrowed, at the end of the day, this is the picture that we're going to see. This is the picture that is going to say to us, you go out looking for the money, at the end of the day, you go back to UK, the UK says, what is wrong with USD? You keep on coming asking for the money, but you tell me you return it back. So can is that possible? That's the request. And then secondly, there is, if you go down, you find that you also received 100,000 approval to Population Association. You gave them the 100,000. What was the competency? What were they going to do with that? Did they do it? Because why I'm asking you this, if you look at the Auditor General's report, you'll find that he is not sure where the money has been asked, whether the service has been rendered. So was that monitored? Was it that achieved? If you can answer that. Now, you also said that the assurance that have been given, who are these students, how many are they thus far, and in which communities, that is still on the same page, 179. Chair of the session, I'm still going on. Page 182. There are services that you have discontinued. The money is so much, 16 million SG. My question is, when these services were advertised, was the need analysis done? Did you do the situational analysis of the need? Were the procurement processes followed? What was the main reason for even going for those projects, if then they are to be continued? And the 16.4, was it then already given, or is the money that you have recovered, or is the money that you realize that you have already lost? It doesn't show on the Auditor General's report, but I'm just wondering, because I don't know what services were rendered, and but I can see the 16.4 million. Coming to the Auditor General's report, it's a report that is actually, you know, if one realizes what he has done for these 2 months, and you read this report, then it gives a very wrong mixed feeling. But now, the material understanding of the vote, you know, and you as the department, which you must rely on as far as the data and the calculation and the costing and all those, you are the department. If you can mislead us, the whole country will be misled because of the data given by yourself. Now, after the Auditor General has written this report, did you engage with the Auditor General? Did you clarify some of the issues with the Auditor General? Because I'll tell you why. If you look at point 10 of the Auditor General, where he speaks about the material understanding of the votes, I'm getting confused. I'll tell you why I'm getting confused. Because you were still continuing with the survey. The work was in progress. So for the Auditor General to come out with this report, what he was basing his findings on, what materials, were the proper materials given to him, or the wrong materials were given to him to come to this decision? What exactly happened? On the same note, you'll find that with your programs, there's so much vermin. There are so much vermin. All these vermin, you're shipping them to program number 6. Then we say, okay, fine. Maybe it's because program number 6 is corporate. There's so much that needs to be done there, although you don't know what is it. But maybe there's so much that needs to be done there. But at the end of the day, the very same program number 6 has going 6. Psalm 39. Then it creates a lot of fraud. I think I need to hold on there. Thank you. I can see the red chain. I was looking at the loop.
The loop from? No, don't be chasing to me. Take advantage of the chain. All right, thank you very much, member. I think some additional questions very quickly from the table before I afford the chair an opportunity to say one or two things to them. Yes. You know, as correctly cited, you mentioned an article on the Business Day today, that David Hoxha. And it goes into the discourse that is currently unfolding. Around the credibility of our statistics, but also around the credibility of the estimates on various areas that usually release estimates on. And now, yeah, there are so many ratings and economists, analysts, and sources of these estimates. And more recently, I think there was one that I felt was a bit out of line from one of our own, the DBSA, on the growth, the GDP estimates, you know. I just wanted to check with yourself the impact of such estimates to the credibility of ZSA estimates. But also in the report, you are indicating that most of the targets related to statistical quality assessment framework were not realized. So I'm not sure as to the impact of such on the credibility of our statistics. And going to the financial report or financial statement. I think the year under review, you are citing that the cases that have been handled, there are 410 cases that have been handled in a fire, damages and losses in cash are concerned. And that was valued at 3.3 million. It's quite a substantial amount. And most of the cases cited here involve vehicle recklessness and all those things. That has to do with mismanagement of vehicles. Now, I appreciate the fact that you are proposing some way of dealing with such problem. But Does it imply the fact that you are only focusing on vehicles, driver's licenses, and other issues related to vehicles, irregular results of vehicles, or maybe a reported accident? Does it imply that this is the only cause of these damages? Or are there other things that we need to know as a committee, as a challenge facing FSA? But also, you are citing in your financial statement irregular expenditure to the value of 6.2 million with cases that have been identified for investigation.
I think there I will appeal that we as a committee, we are finished with the details of this investigation as to, I mean, what goes into this investigation. And also, as a committee, maybe I must request that we are finished with the response plan to emphasis on matters as raised by the AG. I think it really facilitates our work going forward as a committee. So if we can just get to know how are you planning to respond to all the issues raised by the AG. Thank you very much. I will accord the chair before I give an opportunity to respond. Chair does too. Say one of you.
No, thanks, chair of the session. I don't have much, but I was intrigued by the comments on strategic issues by the chair of the council, Prof. And I was looking at this developmental path of essay. And immediately what crossed my mind was to say, what other similar institutions do we have currently that have almost a similar responsibility that is on a continual basis? It's more logistics. And the immediate institution that crossed my mind was the Independent Electoral Commission, the IEC. And I've just seen now of late, recently, how transition seems to be very similar in that institution. And I looked at your developmental path. That stipulates and succinctly so takes us through the journey that you've traversed since 1994. What was the immediate crisis at the time? You say crisis of leadership. 2000 to 2004, then you had a crisis of autonomy that impacted even on the legitimacy in terms of your own results. And I remember there was a contestation. In fact, the institution took a lot of flak from ourselves at the time in government, not parliament, government. I'm sure Parliament came to a defense at that time. Hopefully so. Then you had a crisis, three crisis of control. I just say to myself, probably by now, Prof, you should be having a probably some sense of comfort that moving forward the institution has built internal capacity over a period of time. And shying away from this traditional sense of leadership of institutions, what is commonly known as succession. Now, when you speak about succession, you limit yourself because you're speaking about people who are born in positions. In the traditional sense, succession you find in royal families. And you are anointed, you are not elected. But what I'm trying to say is that given this past, 1994 to date, almost 17 years, you should be. And I hope moving forward you'll be able to address this particular matter so that doesn't create any sense of doubt. Not that we are saying the Statistician General is about to leave, but should anything happen to him, either in the form of deployment and so on and so forth, we should be confident that the institution has got capacity and internal capacity. So that is the matter that will leave in your hands, so that we can be comforted that indeed these issues have been taken care of. So this is the only observation that I wanted to comment on. But besides, I think so far without having to focus on some small teething problems in terms of the recent, you know, activity, which was a national program. I think you've done exceptionally well in that regard. You'll always have some few people there and there, but those are, if you take it within the whole picture, it is not something that we should be making a storm out of it, probably that is being addressed. It reminded me of the meter reading debate in county, and the way it was blown out of proportion when I went to check, because I had to go and debate on this election manifest and all the things. I realized that the number of accounts that the Johannesburg Council has is over 1 million. And yet you're speaking about irregularities or omissions of less than 40,000 queries. So if you take that against the total picture, it's not a crisis. So I'm just saying, even what you have gone through in this past national exercise, if you take the total picture, it's not supposed to constitute a crisis at all. But we always learn from one mistake to the other. Thanks.
All right, Dr. Lawson and the team, but maybe before, I just wanted to check with the chair of the council. What are the prospects of having a concept, maybe document around how to address the problem of lack of capacity to interact with government departments, but also lack of capacity within the government itself, I mean, generate and also to provide assets. I think you'll respond to that. To that part of broader response to other questions. Thank you.
Thanks. I have a team with myself that will deal with the questions. But let me try and find the questions. There are those that relate to corporate services and Mampasele and Sympathy. We'll deal with those. There are those that deal with population and economic statistics, and George Pierre and Kifido will deal with those. There are those that deal with issues around provinces. Center will deal with those. And there are those that have to do with the project that was Dimit and Geneca will deal with that. Let me then try and pick and choose those that I think I can deal with a bit of ease. The training for statisticians for the country, like all other areas that are needed for training, they're rather a big challenge. In that the Act does ask of the statistician general, the council and the minister to ensure that the statistics are of good quality. So it doesn't confine the training to state. It actually broadens that scope to other institutions. If it was like education, then we would have said there are schools, there is a university, there are all those things. But this is a skill that is very specialized, and in many countries, the statistics office creates or causes for the creation of a specialized institution that handles the training. Until such time we get to that point, this situation is not going to be resolved. What we have done is to try and train for SSA, and it doesn't have any impact. Yes, it does have an impact for SSA, but in the environment of monitoring and evaluation and everything, sooner those people will be gone, which is a good thing if they do. But you also need a critical mass at the center. Because there are things that are done in the environment of statistical production that you don't find anywhere at the university. You learn them on the job. So there is a major issue, and the chair of council has been on our case on this one, and trying to see what it is that we are going to do. As far as looking at our staff, as Pedro said, there is a lot of mobility within the organization and the reskilling of people. But whether we are managing that very strategically, I would argue not quite. Because we have the capacity to retain all our interns, but we have not retained as many as we train. There is an absence of alignment from the intentions of getting the interns and the managers absorbing those interns. That supervision that would exist to the extent that it should. So there is a lot of work that has to be done internally to track interns and make sure that they get absorbed. Last year, I had to call the management and say, you will absorb them whether you like it or not. Because we haven't said they are not performing, we haven't said they are not doing this, we haven't said they are not doing that. And you tell me that we need more staff, no, for my dead body, we will absorb them. So we have, of these 17 that you see there, 18 of them, there are 17 that are still within the intensive program. But the idea here is this, that through the national statistics system, rather than placing these people under human resource, ACD, we'll place them under the national statistics system. Because there we have created the market. Because ACD doesn't have the market. It doesn't exchange. It only trades and sends out. Whereas the national statistics system has the market. In that you can say for these two interns, I need a more mature expert in statistics, but these two interns will do it. So I think by doing that we may resolve this problem. But it is the alignment of the organization in terms of who they should supervise, who we should meet, and so on. So that I agree with is an internal problem. But it's not going to resolve in its entirety the problem of getting statisticians in the country. There we need an institution that should deal with that. And I think this is the issue that the chair was talking about. So there's a bigger issue that we need to deal with beyond just the internship program that we have in the DSA. I pointed out what we need to do internally, and I'm saying I'm absolutely focused on this, that interns will stay in the organization and we have to absorb them. Because this business of saying we don't have skills, but we have interns and not absorbing them ever so far. And on the issue of job creation and sustainable jobs, well, one of the things is that they say, yes, we have a staff complement of 4,000. It expands to 156,000 in the year of the census, and we have these people leaving us at the end. We have been approached by a couple of departments, a couple of individuals, that say, well, what do you do with this big database? But what I can say is that we carefully selected these people. They did the most difficult job of knocking at doors, working day in, day out, over a period of, for some over a period of 6 months, for others over a period of 20, 30 days. It's an experience that no one will ever get except through the census. Now, that treasured time, treasured activity, is very, very unique in itself. And I think we have to start thinking differently as to how then do you deal with this 156,000? Maybe a subsection of them, maybe a smaller proportion, and a smaller proportion, and a smaller proportion. But leaving 156,000 just like that may not be the most wisest thing. I think across government, across institutions of the state, we have to think a little bit differently. And there have been people who have approached us in this regard. Not with any concrete proposal, but just saying, these are the people that are there. The question on informal economy, Dr. George. Yes, and there has to be further studies of that. The current labor force study, yes, elicits who is in the informal economy. We've had modules that look at survey of the employed and self-employed out of that movement, which really looks at the informal sector. But I think it requires more collaboration so that one can understand how that economy functions. I agree that there are several things that can be done there. The issue of donor funding, Celia will answer that, but the issue of what do we gave 100,000 to PASA, Population Association of South Africa, and it wasn't donating, it wasn't self-interest. We actually, in the area of demography, in the area of statistics, we provide funds for self-interest. We host the South African Statistics Association every 4th year. The Statistics Association is hosted by academic institutions, but every 4th year it's hosted by us. PASA is also hosted by ourselves every 4th year because we need population scientists. So the resources we have provided are for self-interest to create and recreate these kinds of professions. The money has been appropriately used for conference, for papers, and for best papers. SASA, you'll see what you see there as to who wins the accolade. Over the last number of years, very few black South Africans, colored South Africans have won those awards. They are won by Africans from outside South Africa. They are won by whites. It talks to the way the education system functions. And we have said to the people that evaluate those, they must evaluate them as such. We don't want any paper or sugar coating of that system. They should tell us who is the best student. But what is expected is a very serious problem that South Africans address. And only when we start seeing black South Africans and colored South Africans winning those awards, we'll know that we are doing something right. And so we'll keep that going, but it is reflecting, the reflection is not good at all in relation to how the education system is functioning. So the 33,000 that we give to Africans that come from outside South Africa and white people. So it's a very clear indicator of the kind of crisis that the chair is talking about, and we need to do something about it. The material understanding test, indeed, it arises out of the census project where procurement processes were delayed. And by the end of the year, we hadn't actually paid the suppliers. But the services had been procured and paid in the next financial year. We alerted the financial, what is that committee, the one on finance? So we alerted them to the fact that we are not going to spend the money in that financial year, but this money will have to be rolled over into the new financial year and you'll pay that. So a project of this size, at times you cannot align neatly within the financial years the allocation, but the money has been spent spent appropriately as required. There's been a lot of movement of money. This is a result of what decentralization. We are creating provinces and getting district offices. We are experimenting with whether we can actually give full decentralization, including resources to those. And we are caught by the census right in the middle. So while the money could have been allocated to program seats, it actually also had to be allocated to provinces. So that process of ensuring that the administrative and all those systems are in place has led to this money moving up and down. So we run a big survey program, and that's where the money sits, but it has to be distributed by provinces, because those are agencies that execute the survey program. So that violence is a consequence of that. It's not a pleasing movement of money, but it shows the state of flux in trying to decentralize and have integrated field operations implemented. Vehicle accidents, yes, accidents are the main cause of our problem. We try to look at a model where people buy their own cars, but they are being thrown out because they don't qualify, the blacklisted and all these other things. So we saw the model where we co-own, or the person who owns the car, they would look after their car, so they will not cause accidents. That's my opinion. But that's not coming. It's not coming to fruition. We have a problem. We still have to explore what model of running service we have to adopt in relation to vehicles and so on. And that at the same time reduces the incidence of accidents. But largely it's accidents that I'll leave the other questions to my colleagues. As well, we want to deal with the issue of agility.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, buddy. The data management and information delivery project was one that we started in StatsSA to improve the quality and the processes within the organization. And we had mainly two areas that we were focusing on. The one was standards development and implementation. And in that, we formed a partnership with the CSIR, and we've developed standards. Specifically, the most known one is the South African Statistical Quality Assessment Framework, the SASQAF one. And then we've also realized that standards development is so important that we've institutionalized it, so it became a division, and that got moved out of the project. But that was part of the 16.455 million. The second part of the project was the technology tools that we needed to improve the quality in the statistics. And here we've engaged a supplier from the private sector, and they got a tender for 34 million rand, and they started developing tools. Specifically, we started focusing on metadata. Now, metadata tool is, to explain metadata, it's essentially the data that describes what we do in StatsSA. They started developing this. We gave them free payments, and things were going reasonably okay with the supplier. Then at some stage, we were taking a little bit longer in terms of developing these sorts of tools, and the suppliers came with a list of demands. And when we consulted our legal team on the list of demands, they said that this constituted repudiation of the contract. Now, repudiation of the contract is when one party wants to unilaterally change the conditions of the contract. And we were then forced to terminate the agreement with the private sector company. And so we've terminated, we've paid them a certain amount of money, but we did get the tools that we are still using in the organization at the moment. In terms of continuing with the issues of data quality, because we are still going ahead with improving data quality, we're still going ahead with modernization, but we've also realized that it's rather better to institutionalize these types of activities and use your own skills and build your own skills over time to develop modernization projects within StatsSA. The case of in point is Radio Kapanta, that's been developed by a unit within StatsSA that looks at modernizing the way we look at data and information management information. Thank you.
Could we then move to the retrieval of census calls?
Thank you, Chair and SG. In terms of the time to retrieve the census calls, it was always to be in a staggered approach. As we then start closing on the mop-up, we are also returning a number of cars. But the majority of the cars by the end of November would actually be returned, because that would be in time for our reverse logistics to actually kick in. Thank you.
Thanks, Calvin. Celia, on the issue of the report that time, as well as the donor, yes, yeah.
Thank you, Chair. A very fine eye. Yes, ma'am, it is definitely, I checked on page 142, that is just a typo error. It should be permanent if you look at that. In terms of the donors, Stats SA is leading a statistical capacity building program on the continent as a legacy program from the ISI. And we have received, and so we are funding through donor funds, we are funding young statisticians across Africa to participate in our Young Statisticians Conference. And so we've received donor funding for that. But the donors are very specific if they fund conferences that the money is only allowed to be used for that purpose. So in terms of deficit, we had to return 63,000 of the total amount that they've allocated, and I think it was 6,000 to the Swiss. And it was more balancing because some people, you know, either the hotel costs were a bit cheaper or two people actually cancelled, and that's why we couldn't use that funding of the donor for any other purpose according to the country, according to the country agreement between us and the government. Thank you.
But let me try and deal with the 6 million issue that the Auditor General talks to. This is a matter that is between ourselves and Department of Communication, Government Communication, CCIS, and a supplier. And at the moment, it's a matter that actually has to go to court. So, because it's sub judice, although the 6 million is there, reflected and correctly reflected, it is subject, and I cannot disclose anything further than that, that's where the issue is. But there's something you can... $3.3 million and... Yes, very hard to deal with.
Thank you, Dr. Lotla. Through you, Chairperson, the damages and losses are it's a substantial amount. However, if one looks at it from a historical perspective, it has actually reduced because the accounting officer had instructed that we minimize the usage of hired vehicles. And at the same time, in terms of our normal surveys, we have reduced the number of contract staff that we brought in, excluding the census, because we don't have enough capacity in our permanent structure to drive 5,500 vehicles. But if you look in the year that is under review, the damages that we had were largely on the survey, being the IES survey that we were currently running, or has just come out of field at the end of September. And it was mainly also because the people that we assigned vehicles are ordinarily not people who would drive a vehicle on a continuous basis, being unemployed but having a driver's license. The necessary tests are conducted, but the terrain that we find our driver being exposed to as well leads to accidents or damages happening to vehicles. The type of damage we see would be undercarriage damages because of the rural area terrain that we also transverse. You would find that bumpers are scratched, because I get to see the reports that are after investigations or when the investigation is undertaken by the investigating officers. So in terms of whether we as a department will ultimately get rid of damages and losses that we incur through vehicles, I would like to give a wishful response and say yes, but the reality on the ground suggests that we will not totally rid ourselves of losses through damages. And as the accounting officer has rightly said, we have tried to try and transfer the risk to the driver themselves, but unfortunately not everyone qualifies for a subsidy. Some either because the contract for the type of ad hoc service that we do, like the IES, and those that are already permanent, because we have permanent ties, most of our field workers, their financial situation doesn't really allow them to be to access the subsidy that the state has.
Anna, on the issue of decentralization, Mambasa.
Maybe just further to the losses on the cars, what we do continuously at this stage is to actually monitor the general utilization of the cars in terms of time, in terms of speed, and directly in time actually contact them to say, by the way, you're watched, be careful what you do, you know, to reduce abuse. But as St. Peter said, we are having problems with roads, you're traveling those roads, some of them, and I think you're aware of that. I think one of the things that we have not answered on was the 6.2 million on irregularities that you mentioned. On the HR side, that was on we had wrongfully, mistakenly appointed personnel permanently, which were foreign nationals and not permanent residents, and therefore in terms of public service regulation should not have been appointed permanently, and therefore the whole period of the appointment was declared as irregular. We have attended to that matter and changed it. That's the one. On a decentralization, we started it fairly gradual in cooperation with or in conjunction with all the people in the provinces. Number one, looking at the capacity that exists there, because we do not have the liberty to employ enough people to actually make it a full-blown decentralization as we would wish, and have over a period of a year worked together with all stakeholders in the provinces, in head office, the line managers when it comes to HR, to finance, SCM, to say, okay, what is it that we can feasibly decentralize and have it work and still have internal controls being in place, ensure proper procedures are followed. And that led then to a decentralization up to provincial level, but also not to a full decentralization. We had already certain functions decentralized on the finance side in terms of cash flow, and then when the asset management, we have done the obtaining of quotations from the SCM side on the provincial side, also to actually enhance the whole issue of buying locally. The database, supplier database, we established it or enhanced it from the provincial side, the HR functions. Yes, our ideal, and we do want to decentralize it to the district level because that's where the real action is happening. But it's a capacity issue at this stage. And also we need to see and analyze how effective have we been in that decentralization. Where are the shortcomings? What do we still need to strengthen before we can go the step further? On the interns, we have so far absorbed all interns that we had in the previous years, except for those that have taken up positions in other government departments or in public or private institutions. This current year, we still have 54 out of the 58 interns, and the intention is pending on their performance to absorb those as well. We are also getting in additional people that we had sent to ISAC, to ISA, and the other countries. We're also going to take on the bursaries that we had given out to learners. They will come into the organization now as interns. So we are pretty much intending to build them within the organization. And actually, if you look around on the site, many of our colleagues have grown within the organization. They're catered from the organization, which I would put as a result of succession planning, because we started some years ago in the organization and have grown and have now responsible positions in that very same organization.
The ISTAC, ZAI, and the Institute of Statistical and Applied Economics and Makerere, and the ISTAC is the institute in Tanzania for statistics. And then the other one is the Ivory Coast, where we train our staff, and we also have local bursaries. And all those are coming back into the organization. One of the things that we did earlier on, why you see the census so successful, is from 2001 we have actually been sending people to those institutions, and a good number of them are actually at the district offices now, and they are organizing and managing our statistical collections at that level. Which brings me to the question around collaboration at province and district level. Only when we have got these people can we move with a lot of confidence that we have professionals that can run things at the level of district and at the level of province. Collaboration also with the Department of Health and Home Affairs. Earlier in 1998, we already asked that registration be done at hospitals. And that's been done, and that has improved the birth register. Of course, the child support grant has sped up that process. But when we drop the child support grant, we don't know whether it will have the negative effect of not children getting registered, because that's an incentive. And whether that incentive is seen as the only thing that causes people to be registered is another matter. But that's the task that the statistics office, or the statistician general and the health council and the minister have to look at in terms of statistical collection. Which central piece is about how we manage and keep registers converted to statistical registers. Talk on the informal economy. I know that the economy says something about that, and I think we can elaborate a bit on that.
Thank you, Chair. The estimate of economic activity in the informal sector is estimated at the moment at around 5.5% of GDP. And we are quite comfortable with that level. Of course, the quality of the national accounts is a reflection of the quality of the surveys that feed into it. So it might be appropriate just to briefly mention where those estimates come from. And as the SG has mentioned, we have a survey of employers and self-employed. Runs every 4 years. It is a module of the quarterly labor force survey. In the labor force survey, we will ask the households whether they are involved in the informal sector, working for themselves. If the answer is yes, they get a follow-up question there where we would ask in which industry are they involved in the informal sector, and also a couple of questions on the finances related to that. broadly speaking, you would want to know what is the income the person has derived from his informal sector activities, as well as the costs associated with that, with the difference of the two being the value that was added. Often, analysts are under the impression that the value added of the informal sector should be quite a bit higher than what the estimates are. And that is because of the perception that the informal sector should add much more value added per capita. But the reason that is unfortunately not so in South Africa is that the bulk of our informal sector is linked to the trading activities. We don't have as much informal sector activity in manufacturing or the provision of business or personal services as you might find in other African countries. And in a case where a person operates as a trader, the value that he adds to the economy is only the trade margin. The actual production of the fruit, for example, that gets resold, the value of the production of that fruit is already captured in the formal sector activities. So you only pick up the bit of the trade margin that is added. If, for example, the bulk of our informal sector was involved with the manufacturing of furniture on an informal sector, then the per capita value added per person would have been much higher. But we are dominated on the trade side in the informal sector. Thank you.
There is very little vertical integration within the informal sector. The targets of quality assessment. Yes, we are not meeting those targets. A very involved activity, and if we have to assess all government departments, including our own internal work, as they say, it requires quite some capacity within internally to do the work. So we need to get more people inside the organization in the area of the national statistics system, in the area of quality and methods and standards, who will actually perform this daunting task. And so only then will we see a real progress on the South Cup. So as our work program indicates that we will work, increase the quality of statistics, increase the quantity, and that can only be done through coordination, and that expansion will require more people to be put in place to do this kind of work. At the moment, that's as far as we can go, and I think we will have to, if we have the same capacity, we have to revise our targets downwards because of the kind of constraints. I think that the chair will then, or there's an idea before.
I just wanted, I forgot to respond on the question about the cost, and I will return, my apologies. We had a total of 6,362 cars hired at some stage. We are going to utilize 500 cars and the post-enumerated survey, which is starting today. We have already since Monday returned 400 vehicles and are continuously doing that. Unfortunately, we couldn't return all of them because the hire companies don't have the capacity to take all the cars back in one go, and they asked us to do it again. So I hope we will ensure that they don't charge us additional for those days that they can't handle us. Just on the audit progress on the two matters of emphasis, we continuously every 2 weeks have a session with all the relevant stakeholders to monitor what is happening on issues that they raise in terms of internal control and otherwise, but we will send you a report on that if that's so desired.
The question, one thing, did we answer that health and the woman affairs issue? Okay. Chair.
Chair, I'll be very brief, but really want to thank you for the invitation to come back with a report, if the committee so please, on the strategic issues. But allow me to say, the 5-year strategy that was adopted and was presented to you here, you remember the Blue Book?
That five-year strategy is actually very simple and straightforward. It says there's an information gap. Because the demand for information has increased so dramatically, we are not providing adequate information to address the demand. Classical example, by law, a municipality must produce an IDP. If you look at the guidelines on the IDP, it actually describes the extent to which data are required for the municipality to legally publish that IDP. And the guidelines that is given by both local government and rural development to the municipalities are very, very strict and clear. Where does the municipality get the data from? And that is a big challenge we're facing. In this strategy, we say that we must coordinate various institutions of state to produce more information to meet this increased demand. The second point we say is when that information gap is addressed, then it creates another gap called the skills gap. Because where do we get the people that can produce this additional amount of information? And then the last gap that gets exposed as we expand in that way is the quality gap. But the quality gap in itself creates a skills gap as well, because what we now have is we have SASQAT, which is the South African Statistical Quality Assessment Framework, which is a brilliant tool. When a survey goes through, or any data set goes through SASQAT, you immediately see what's wrong, and you're able to fix it. But where do we have sufficient people to now go in and conduct this quality assessment of all and sundry surveys that is being done throughout the state? And that is why issues like the Isibalo Institute is absolutely critical. I'm less worried about addressing the skills crisis in Stats SA, because at least there we have quite a few real statisticians. But what about the Department of Home Affairs? What about the Department of Health? What about the Department of Education? What about, if I was the DG of Education, I would do exactly what they've done. I would come to Stats SA and steal a couple of people from them, because I know they are the skills. Now, when a department steals staff from Stats SA, where does Stats SA find people to replace them? Because anybody here in this chair can work in any other government department, but when you go to education, any senior manager there without the statistical and relevant skills would find it difficult to come sit in this chair. And that is what the crisis is. And that is why the Isibalo Institute's focus needs to be on giving those skills to the different departments. One last point, in response to Dr. George's question about the informal economy. There are parts of the informal economy that is extremely difficult to measure. So, for example, one of the things we do is we measure commercial agriculture, but we don't measure subsistence agriculture well enough. Gets picked up in the survey Joe De Beer was talking about in that sense. In this census, what we have done is, in fact, built in a question so that we can create a frame, because the difficulty with doing a survey in subsistence farming is that you don't have a frame which you can draw samples from. So in this census, for example, there is a question that will help us to build a frame from which we could in future hopefully do sample surveys around subsistence farming as well. And then, as Joe explained, in the rebasing of GDP, we are now able to give an estimate of what the value add contribution of the informal settlement is. I do think that while your points are relevant, the danger is that we overestimate
what the value of the value add contribution of the informal settlement is, informal economy is. And that's probably in another discussion with the Minister of Planning, who also is responsible for us. But that kind of question of how do one create those small businesses that actually are more value add than what is currently the case is more policy debate than a statistical debate for us. Okay, so yes, we will avail ourselves of the opportunity to prepare a report on some of the strategic issues. And thank you again very much.
Hello, just a follow-up. Let's do it quickly.
It's a very short one. What Professor just said, with the state plan for next year, okay? If within the state plan for our own oversight, it can show clearly the measures that they were taken so as to prevent, on the expenditure management, so as to prevent the irregularities that were highlighted by the Auditor General, because it's not in their section 1-2 on the human resource. If they can come up on that section that will be seen next year, the retention strategy towards the interns, because there should be a retention strategy. Thank you.
All right, instead I've just instructed the committee secretary, because I took it that it was a clear request that we must be given a response plan to AG's consent. And I was just saying to the committee secretary, after 2 weeks, if there's nothing, you must write something. So as we remind the team that we need this information. Thank you very much. I think we have really realized the purpose of this meeting as outlined at the inception. Of course, we went beyond our limited time, but it was for a good cause. Thank you very much, but now I'm going to hand over the reins to the appropriate chairperson to obviously close this meeting officially and prepare for our next session. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, but just to correct you, Honorable Van Rooyen, that the chair for Standing Committee on Appropriation is Mr. Fogel. Yeah. No, I think we have come to the end, as Honorable Van Rooyen is saying, and I don't think there's any more to add. I've said what I wanted to say much earlier. Safe to say that, Prof, you know this thing of labor mobility like capital in today's world. Looking in your team, I can immediately identify faces that I've seen elsewhere before. And I don't know whether I should say statistics. South Africa stole them from my department. Retenga is one of them. And I think Matiteng, I met her in another department some time ago. I don't know where. But she's with ZSA. And we should really appreciate that this recirculation within our own. But that doesn't take away the point that we've raised of making sure that the department also begin to take issues of statistics very, very seriously, and therefore even training must encompass that particular element. It's not the responsibility of your organization to actually produce and become a conveyor belt for everybody, given the information and the information gap and the demand that is there. But thank you very much, LC and Prof and your team. Thank you very much. And I'll remember 5 minutes leg stretch. We'll be back here.
11 medium-term budget policy statement. So I know that Mondays are normally constituency days. And the report was circulated yesterday. I don't know if honorable members have had the opportunity to look into the report. It is almost similar to what we were dealing with last week. Like I said in the last meeting, you know, this time of the year, fatigue creeps in. We try to do as much as we can so that we don't carry over things into the next financial year. And I think we're going to be a little bit in a pressure between this week and next week as a Committee on Finance. I know Honorable Koranoff has been saying under the leadership of Van Roy, and I'm sure he'll exhaust the budget of the committee and find some overstuff. In fact, what I was speaking 15 years this afternoon or this morning, I said, I'm sure we must have a small committee that will work with the WIP to identify critical areas and probably those areas that we need to be empowered on within the committee for next year. But it's not a subject for discussion for now. Can we check if there's any comments on the draft report? Dr. Josh?
Chairperson, I have only some recommendations. If we're going to do those now or when?
I think we should go to recommendations.
Okay,
yeah.
Can I?
If one of the members are comfortable with the body.
Chairperson, let's just one thing. On the last heading, paragraph 7, the revised fiscal framework, maybe it's not, you know, but they specifically referring to debt finance under 7.3. But you know, really the major issue is the state wage bill. Should there be a heading on that or a paragraph on that? Because, you know, I'm more concerned about that than debt finance. Chairperson, maybe it's not fitting to put it there.
It's not?
Not fitting to put it there.
That is 7.3. The whole 7. Or because it's part of the fiscal framework. Okay. Agreed, honourable members, that we expand. Is that the right way?
Dear person, I'm happy. Let's go to recommendations.
All right, okay. Good.
Recommendation?
Thank you. I've got four. I haven't actually written them in a particular way, but these are the gist of them. I think, you know, obviously having read through the report, and I think it's a fairly accurate reflection of, you know, what I certainly would want to say, that the National Treasury needs to present us with a detailed plan on changing the spending patterns from current consumption expenditure to productive spending. Now, the Minister has said this himself, and it is in the medium-term budget policy statement, where there's a lot of consumption spending, particularly on the public sector wage bill that Honourable Kuhnhoff was referring to. So I don't necessarily think we need to mention in detail about the public sector wage bill, but certainly I would want to see from Treasury some kind of plan to say, yes, we acknowledge, as they have all over the show, that there is excessive spending on the current consumption side of the economy, and that we need to take steps to make sure there's more spending on the productive side, the infrastructure side, and that there needs to be a plan, because the National Treasury is talking about it a lot, but we actually haven't seen any plans. That's the first one. The second one, and this is also something that the Minister mentioned, I questioned him on it in the deliberations, was that the National Treasury needs to present a detailed plan on steps to be taken to reduce leakage from the public financial system. Because the Minister did say, I mean, the Special Investigations Unit said it's 30 billion per annum, which is a lot of money, and he then detailed specific steps that Treasury was in fact taking, but I can't find them anywhere. So it would be very good, I think, if Treasury gave us that detailed plan, and then we can hold the necessary people to account on that. Thirdly, and this is quite a troubling issue for me, is the Budget Office. You know, we've been talking about the Budget Office for a while. In the previous term already, this committee, or this predecessor committee, wrote the Act, or the Moneyballs Amendments and Related Matters Act, and a Budget Office was supposed to be set up. There still isn't one. And that Budget Office is supposed to give us guidance about their view on the macro economy. Now, of course, we don't have that. So we just have to, you know, use our own recognizance, etc. But I think that we need to say something about the Budget Office that's not for the finance, for National Treasury, that's actually for Parliament that needs to be set up. And then finally, this allies to point number three. We know the problems in the global economy. And we're not sure whether the European debt crisis is actually going to get resolved properly. Now, if that isn't the case, so if the debt crisis just doesn't go the way that we hope it would get better, we might find that the macroeconomic assumptions made by Treasury might be overstated. So we might end up in lower growth rates. Hopefully not, but if we do, we will be in very serious trouble. Because the revenue will decline, and we won't have enough money, obviously, in the fisc, but then there's pressure still on expenditure. So my question, and I think maybe some recommendation to the National Treasury, without being alarmist, is that there should be some kind of contingency plan in the event that the macroeconomic variables do not resolve as expected. So in other words, if we don't have the growth that we expect, what actually are we going to do then? Because there's no space, because the debt, I mean, we can't squeeze much more debt out, and therefore if we don't get the growth and we don't get the revenue, we're going to have to make very serious decisions about managing the public money. Thank you, Chair.
Any more? Madame?
Thank you, Chair. Mine is just one. If you look at the MTPTS, the statement itself, you'll find that the minister indicated on three principles that within this term, he will focus on those three principles, which was counter-cyclical, debt management, and the regeneration equity. Those are the three principles that he will use, the policy principles that he will use. But we will appreciate if we get the details thereof, especially when it comes to the debt management. What is the plan? What is this plan? Because it's just highlighted on the statement, together with the regeneration equity, just highlighted them, but they are not detailed. If we can just get that in detail as a committee, so that we are aware that we are safe or we are driving towards a danger zone. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson. Thank you. Just two things. Maybe we should echo what we have done in the BRRR report, that we want the state wage bill to go below 40% again. And then, secondly, on inflation, I think the projections are that we're going to leave the range, the 3 to 6% range. I'm a little bit concerned about that, and I don't know whether we just should say something about that they should strive to remain within, you know, the range of 3 to 6. It is expected that it will happen. But I remember that I read something in that statement that we will go beyond that. Maybe this.
Chair, maybe let me make my submission on what was just said by Honorable Coronel. I think Honorable George was correct by indicating that because there is an acknowledgement by all, including the Minister, that these developments globally make our economy to be more vulnerable, and as a result undermines the certainty of some of the projections, you know. So I think the issue of the inflation rate falls within the contingency plan that I fully support as to how we might end up handling this, you know, because it's one of those that has to do with the uncertainty that are currently prevailing. So maybe if we can accommodate that in the contingency plan recommendation. And the other thing we make a determination of, Chair, as you correctly cited when you started this session, that this report, together with the one on the revised fiscal framework, obviously there are a lot of similarities. It goes also to recommendations. Now we need to make a determination if are we bringing back some of this, because I have already identified two now. The first recommendation is on how the plan by the Ministry to eliminate wasteful and irregular expenditure from the public finance system. You know, it's one of those. And I think maybe we really need to make a determination as to, but also the wage bill aspect. We dealt with the wage bill aspect in that report when we dealt with the revised fiscal framework.
So we need to make a determination if I'm going to reiterate those or are they adequately covered? Will they be adequately covered if we leave them only in the first report? Thank you. In fact, I'll suggest that we keep them in the first report and not reiterate them in the repeated in the first report. Thank you.
Do we follow the logic that Honourable Van Ron is advancing on the first two recommendations, which have been covered in the fiscal framework report and deliberation?
Although for me,
because in any event we have considered this as an overall, we can repeat by saying as already stated, you know, in the previous, in the fiscal framework report, we repeat that. It's an area of emphasis for us as a committee and consistency. But I think we should find a way to couch it in such a way that we acknowledge that we have accelerated in the other report. We still repeat it here. I think we should proceed in that spirit. What was the other issue? Madam, you spoke about counter-cyclical issues. The three principles: counter-cyclical debt management plan, and what was regenerational equity. Okay. How do we couch them as part of the recommendation?
I was saying, if you look at the statement by the minister, he just mentioned those as our guiding policy within this fiscal framework period. But the Treasury needs to come back to us and give us the details thereof.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
All right. In on the issue of basically the sustainability of the projections in terms of the macroeconomic outlook, it is important to say, to ask Treasury to come back to us and say how do they actually intend, because you have this uncertain global world, global economy. Basically is to actually begin to prepare people psychologically without being an alarmist that there is this real challenges that we have. We live in the real world. Every day you pick up a business day, you can see, you know, what is that. Particularly in the Eurozone. And our exposure, the South African economy, we are more exposed to Europe than to the US economy. Now, this crisis in the Eurozone has got more direct or serious negative impact, of course, if it doesn't come out of the woods, than what we have gone through in the 2008-2009, which was more around the American situation contagion. But also had a fiscal state at that time. Now, fiscal state was not as bad as, or was not as desperate, if one wants to use the word, as it will be now. We think, personally from where I'm sitting, I think we should find a way to couch it in such a way that
National Treasury to respond at this, on all these issues in a way that you continue to give hope but cautious hope at the same time. Because you've got external factors that are entirely not dependent on ourselves. But I don't know how to couch it, because what the Honorable George is raising is that given this uncertainty, National Treasury should give us some sort of a plan on how they intend or it intends to actually respond to this challenge. That, am I right, Honorable George?
Yes, Mr. Chairperson. I think the key thing is what we're saying is that in the event that, as you said, that the crisis continues and that macroeconomically we don't get what we're expecting, there does need to be some kind of a contingency. But again, to say it without getting all over alarmist is not the easiest. But I do think it is important because that is our job, to look ahead. No, okay, thanks, Chair.
You know, suppose it's said in September 2009, you may not be the right person today, but you said something very profound. I don't know whether this administration couldn't practice what he said about the crisis. He said the economic crisis presents an opportunity for the world to imagine new models, new world, and possibly new economic reorientation. But where we are, I don't see, I don't see the world thinking out of the box. I think it's tough. But maybe it's something that will be discussed at another forum, not here. The situation is just too, I don't know, perhaps we're not finding the right intervention, because the stimulus packages that were actually put in place, continual bailouts of the banks and so on and so forth, the IMF and the World Bank coming, it seems all these things are not yielding the necessary results. And how long will the developing nations or emerging markets continue to be almost remain resolute in this situation? It's something that we have to find time to look at and reflect. Not just as the Committee of Finance, but it's an issue that I think should actually, the society should assist with, and those who are policymakers at the same time. It's quite concerning, it's not worrying, it's concerning. Let me just stop there. Madam.
Thank you, Chair. You are so right. The circumstances are beyond our control and as a result, we just have to cross the bridges. We arrive every time, much as we have, supposed to have some tentative planning. I don't know whether I'm repeating what Honorable George said, but with that, the first recommendation that he has raised, the spending plan, I was going to add on that, or I don't know, I don't know whether it was Alan I was talking to, that's why I'm repeating myself. If the National Treasury can put in some austerity measures towards government spending.
I think we have exhausted our deliberations. What I'm going to request is that honourable members, because they've been saying all sorts of things, if you can reduce your recommendations and send them to the committee secretary, and then we'll find a way to penalize that before it goes to
it comes out of the final report. But for now, we need to adopt the report with this amendment. Do you agree on that? Mover and seconder? Unanimous?
Yeah.
Thank you. Honourable Member, I think we've come to the end of our business for today.